Washy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? If you want to contact the programme, 51551 for text, or you can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Thanks very much to the captain for keeping my chair warm yesterday. I was off celebrating my son's 8th birthday. I've never done that before. I've never taken a day off to help one of my children celebrate their birthday. And I'm disappointed that I didn't do it before. It's a brilliant idea if you can. If you can take a day off to be around for that day, that very special day, because they pass very quickly, as we all know. And when you're 7 going on 8, your birthday is a huge thing in your life. It looms large for months and months beforehand. And there's plans made from everything from breakfast to dinner and everything in between. Who's going to be there? And of course, things are restricted now with the lockdown, but little cousin Ollie was there. Cocoa Pops and pancakes for breakfast, and McDonald's for dinner, just so you know. And in between, we recorded a hip-hop track. Ollie did beatbox, Tom did the rapping. And there was YouTube videos shot and all sorts of things. So we had a great day, and we had the UCC, the ultimate chocolate cake, with one candle on it. Well, it was an 8. So that's what we did yesterday. Let's go crack. 36 is the number you need to know about today. 36 is the estimated number of alien civilizations in the Milky Way capable of communication. So now it's not the question, is there alien life out there? The question is, how much alien life is out there? And 36 is the answer, according to the astrobiological Copernican principle. Christopher Cornelius is a professor in University of Nottingham. And they've calculated this. You know that Goldilocks thing. There are loads of 7 different things they reckon you need all to be in place before life can exist. So they've done the research. They've looked at all the various things in our galaxy, and they've calculated that 36. So what's going on in their world at the moment? Are they aware of what's going on in our worlds? Do they know that we're coming out of a pandemic? Do they know that the government talks in Ireland are just completed? That for the first time in the history of the state, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are in power. If they know, do they care? Do they think like us? Have they got brains like us? Are they aware of who they are? I was thinking all these things when I was reading this morning. We're very aware of who we are and where we sit in the world. And then when we expand from the world and we expand into the galaxy and we realise that we're just little specks on a ball floating around in space, and then we think to ourselves, we're so inconsequential. And then you come right back down to your family and you realise, well, you're, you know, a father, a husband, a son, a brother, whatever. And for the people in your life, you're hugely important. And you have to entertain those two thoughts. That I always get sort of a bit flabbergasted when I think about it, because we are inconsequential. You know, when you look up at the moon, you realise we're on a ball and we're floating in space and tiny little things and all that, and 36 other worlds like us and a huge galaxy, and then there's loads of galaxies and all that sort of thing, and infinity. You think about all that, but then you think, well, you know, in our small little bubbles of worlds, and we're more conscious of our little bubbles now because we had to exist in them for the last 3 months, that we are hugely important. So juggling those two thoughts, inconsequential, very important, inconsequential, very important. So if you can solve that conundrum for me, please, 51551, ray@rte.ie. Underneath that article about the 36 civilizations, there's an article about Mary Trump, who is Donald Trump's niece, and her dad, Fred, who died a good while ago, I think back in the 80s. Was obviously Donald Trump's brother. She is writing a book, or has written a book, and it's going to be released on the 11th of August, called Too Much and Never Enough. And it looks like it's going to be a tell-all. She has spoken to Mary Trump, Donald Trump's sister. Mary Ann Trump, I should say, Donald Trump's sister. It says here, so Mary Ann Trump is a retired federal judge. She shares intimate and damning thoughts about the president. So that's going to be a much talked about and much sought after book when it's released on the 11th of August. So too will our book. Yes, a page from your life, from my life, from a life. It looks like we have a publisher now, more to be revealed, but we're going to get over 100 of the entries into a book which will be published, and we'll raise funds for a charity, and that would be one of the big books for the Christmas market, we hope. So with that in mind, I'll read you one more. I think that we'll read a few more before the end of the week, but the shortlist has gone off to our judges, and we hope to have a winner by Thursday week, which is the 25th of June. So this one came in from Rosaline Dalton, a page from Rosaline's life. Chipper chips were always my favourite, says Rosaline. On a day out to buy my communion dress, we stopped by a cafe, and I, of course, ordered my treasured treat, while my grandmother had soup and my mother had a sandwich and tea. While they were chatting away, I decided to put some salt on my chips. Not paying attention, I accidentally poured sugar all over them. I was stunned and jumped from my seat, roaring and making a big fuss. I was firmly told to sit down and be quiet. My grandmother, not wanting to waste the chips, started to blow the sugar off. I could see from where I was sitting that droplets from her mouth were dive-bombing into my plate. Not to mention that these droplets were living with the same pair of dentures for years. The same dentures that were thrown in the bin by mistake, only to be retrieved, washed, and deposited straight back into their place of dwelling. Years of tea stains clung to every nook and cranny, such that most of their white colour had disappeared, making them appear like beach pebbles after the tide had gone out. I decided there and then that I wasn't touching those chips with sugar. Sorry about that. With sugar and droplets of saliva. Even if she did manage to get all the sugar off. Meanwhile, my starving stomach thought my mouth had gone on strike. There, my grandmother said, all the sugar is gone. Eat up. Eat up? Was she going insane, I thought. Who in their right mind would put one of those contaminated chips in their mouth? Now stone cold, saliva soaked and semi-sweet. Taking a deep breath, I shouted across the table that I wasn't going to eat them now or ever, and demanded a new plate of chips. We now had a non-paying audience watching this midday theatrical event. With that little outburst, I was ejected from my seat by my grandmother, marched into the toilet and told in no uncertain terms that I was to walk back to my seat, eat the chips and sit there until she and my mother had finished their snack and that I was getting nothing else to eat. She saw nothing wrong with the plate of chips. In Africa, there were little children starving. They would eat the chips and be glad of them, she said. I was marched back to the table to start the agonising task of picking out the chips that had escaped most of the sugar and saliva avalanche, a task that no child should have to complete just after having bought their first Holy Communion clothes. We left the cafe with my mother complaining that I should watch what I was doing in future, that my grandmother was kind enough to treat me to a snack, and that I should apologise to her for my behaviour. After all, she was old and should be respected. A lesson duly learned. Rosie Dalton. Isn't that great? We've all done it. We've all done it. Put the sugar on the chips. Well, in my case, it was the Irel coffee, which I thought was vinegar. I put them on the chips. In our house, there was, you know, if you ruined your chips, there was no more coming. There's no seconds in our house. Nine of us all looking at the chips. How many did he get? He got five. He got five. I want five. Anyway, that's great, Rosaline. Lovely little story. Thanks for that. And thanks to everybody who entered. We got thousands and we can't get back to everybody, obviously. So thank you so much for the emailed ones and the handwritten ones. Emails over the weekend and yesterday to ray@rte.ie. Hi, Ray. While now remote working, I get to listen to your show nearly every day. Anyway, when I heard the discussion about place names, I felt I had to share this. It featured in the Limerick Leader a few years ago, so it's not mine as such, but I cut it out and kept it. I've shown it to many family, work colleagues, etc. We always get a laugh. Anyway, here goes. Based on Limerick place names and around an imaginary conversation, and goes as follows. You see, it probably, if you can see it, it probably looks better because it has the capital letters in it. So you can see where the place names are. Anyway, I'll give it a go. Ring Moylan and get him to ask Keaton, how does Abby feel? Are you with me? Tell him Patrick's well, Coleman's well, and Anacotti is doing well. We thought they were all going to effing croak, but Gary Spillan took them to hospital and they're foins since. That's great. I heard you mention Dune recently and also Bilbo. I'd prefer you didn't read out my name, but would be happy to receive a reply or acknowledgement. Well, there's acknowledgement. I see people, it's a whole new world and people are working from home, they're listening to the radio. And if they send an email into us and we read it out and then their boss hears their name on the radio and they're thinking, what are they doing listening to the radio and emailing that radio show? They should be working. So it's a bit of a bind, isn't it? It's a bit of a bind. Anya's been on to us. She says, I can't believe Den TV is coming back. I'm super excited. I love that show. I will certainly be tuning in from Canada to check it out. I better set the record straight. It's only coming back for 15 minutes on the 26th of June as part of Comic Relief. It's not coming back full time. I think people got the wrong end of the stick. Anyway, Anya says, I was on the Pumpkin Challenge for Halloween. I think it was 1998 or 1999. I remember telling you my favourite singer was Tina Turner, but I didn't really know her or any of her music. In fact, I just watched her movie the night before, and that's why I said Tina Turner. I got a little stuck for words on the phone when you asked me and blurted out Tina Turner. I think you were a little shocked at my answer. I was probably shocked that you'd watched the movie at such a young age because there's adult themes in that movie. I didn't win the DVD, but I did get a denim jacket with the Den logo on it and a few stickers. And that's Anya Duggan. Today I work in CBC in Canada. I love to watch them film children's TV shows here, but it will never be like the Den. And Deirdre was on as well with another story about the Den. Keep them coming in because we're forwarding over to the TV people and we're hoping to have some people on the night. So if you have stories about the Den, and in particular we're trying to locate some people who would have been on the Den for whatever reason and now are working on the front line. So healthcare workers, doctors, nurses, whatever. If you were on the Den all those years ago and you have a story to tell, it'd be great to hear from you. ray@rte.ie and we will forward them over to the TV people. Deirdre's been on. She says, my sister got married last year. On the day of the wedding, there were envelopes on the table. Inside the envelopes were photos of our new husband, Col. He had won Smile of the Year on the Den. It was hilarious. He's holding a big toothbrush and my sister, who he had just married, is a dental nurse. Ah, there you go. I'll attach the photos. And there you go. There's Col on my knee. And to think that he's married now, and they sent photographs from the wedding now, and now Carl's about 6'2", big hairy man, nothing like the Carl that sat in my knee all those years ago. Anyway, thanks for that, Deirdre. Now let's see what you're saying. Elaine says, happy birthday to your little Tom. Well done on taking the day off to make it extra special. Did you bake the cake? I did bake the cake, yes. The ultimate chocolate cake, the UCC we're calling it. How many made the shortlist, or can you say it's very exciting? 150 or thereabouts, yeah. Regarding the universe, what's out there and what we understand, we are like a fly trapped behind a kitchen window. We can see out into the garden, but can't yet figure it all out. That's a good analogy, Emmett. I might use that one. You did many a good disco back in Doon. Great nights there were. Doon is a little place near Oola in Limerick. And there was a big hall. They used to have discos there, a dry hall, teenage discos. And I used to love saying, how you doing, Doon? Yeah, easily entertained. Good afternoon. That's Maxine Nightingale. Right back to where we started from. Why, you ask, would I play that? Well, it's big on TikTok at the moment. My daughter and her friend were dancing that last night. It's from 1977 or thereabouts. And I don't know how it happens, but obscure hits from the 70s and 80s appear on TikTok and you find people of 12 and 13 dancing around to them, which is great, I suppose. Like Break My Stride by, what's Matthew Wilder? Was that his name? That was big on TikTok recently and that one's big now. It's great. Great tune. A great tune. Laughing here, coming from family of 10. Our baby bro now in his 40s ate his chips, which he had coated sugar to stop all his brothers and sisters picking his chips as we came home from work. Aha. So he did it on purpose. As a defence mechanism. Do you remember every kid on the Den used to say hi to Mrs. Whoever in school and all of first class and such a nice school and everybody who knows me? Classic. It was a collectively accepted script. Long live the Den. I think they did it on all on radio shows as well. Can I play a request? I'd like to play a request to my mother and father and sisters and brothers and John, my best friend, and everybody in St. Mary's National School and everybody who knows me. Isn't that the way it was done? That's the way when people used to play requests on the radio. The voice of Big Brother is on the way. But before that, I have to remind you about this. Today is the turn of Leitrim and Westmeath. Yes, on the All-Ireland quiz, Leitrim take on Westmeath. So if you want to step up to the plate and fly your county flag, Give us a call on 1850 715900, 1850 715900. Leitrim and Westmeath, it's your day today.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 51551 for your texts. It's hard to believe it's 20 years since Big Brother first aired on TV. Fans of the show have been enjoying a trip down memory lane over the last couple of nights on E4. They've been showing the best shows ever. And one man who's been a constant throughout the entire series, from Channel 4 to Channel 5, is Marcus Bentley. He's the voice of Big Brother and he's on the line. Good afternoon, Marcus.
Day one on the Big Ray D'Arcy Show. Hiya.
Your work here is done, Marcus. That's it. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, mate.
Yeah. It's crazy because it's just that voice. It's so iconic. Your voice is so iconic, Marcus.
Oh, thank you. I like to think so. You know, my missus says so. So, you know, I take it.
Does she get you to do the voice at home?
She does. She tells me to shut up most of the time, but that's another story, you know.
Yeah. So you were there from the start. And of course, way back then, it was being promoted as a social experiment. Wasn't that what they called it, a social experiment?
Yeah, they did. And they got me in, but they had me sitting up. They said, oh, Marcus, you're too Geordie. Could you just bring it back a bit? In fact, I want no inflection whatsoever. So I think I got quite stressed out the first series, thinking, I just want to be me. Uh-huh. And then after that, I could sort of have my own social experiment so I could sort of be myself.
Yes.
And strange days, because I don't think they knew what they were doing, but they didn't know what they had. And then sort of about 5 weeks into Big Brother, what with Nasty Nick's shenanigans, it just went absolutely crazy, and then bang, we're still talking about it today. And as you say, the best ever shows are shown on E4 at 9 o'clock every weeknight. Yeah. Or well, actually Sunday to Thursday.
Right, bring us back then. What were you doing before it started?
I'm an actor.
Right, okay.
I haven't said that for a while because I don't feel like an actor these days. The
no,
same as like when I
tough.
First started, I didn't feel like a voiceover guy. So I did quite well at the start of leaving drama school about 92. I did, you know, in The Bill, London's Burning, and then lots of theatre, or some nice tasty commercials. And then I had nothing. It went sort of thinking, oh, I might start trying to do some voiceovers. And then about 98, I got a voiceover agent. And then I was doing really well doing that. And then come 2000, they were looking for a voice of Big Brother, for Big Brother, this new show that I hadn't heard of it really. Mm. There was a rumbling in the air, and then they liked my voice, the producers, and then they asked me to do a few bits, and I didn't find out for a couple of years that the commissioning editor for Channel 4 just loved the way I said the word chickens. And that got me the gig. Now, you've got to start somewhere. They've got to choose somebody. And thank goodness they put chickens in that first house.
Say it again.
Say it again.
Say chickens again.
That's how I say chickens. So, right, you know, okay. It's probably how you say it too. So.
Chickens, yeah. Why didn't I get the job?
Exactly. Yes, why? Yeah. It just happens to be in the right place at the right time.
And Marcus, were regional accents common enough on telly back then, or was that a gamble for
them? I I once went to this voiceover convention when people were thanking me. I said, hang on, you know, the thing is, it is better, you know. And you sort of, there's quite a few Scots on TV.
Yeah.
But, and then, you know, there was certainly nobody from the Northeast doing, you know, voiceovers. There was the famous people, of course, like Anne and Dec were around,
yes,
and all that type of thing. But, and Tim Healy and all that type of thing. But yeah, I think we sort of broke down a few doors. I mean, I worked independently after that for Channel 4 as a continuity announcer from 2001 to 2010. And they had a whole range of voices, and they were quite famous for it. In fact, I think they had about 40% Irish voices on there, which is remarkable. So,
yes.
You know, good old Channel 4.
And you were saying there earlier on that they were trying to change at the start. They employed you because you said chicken in a certain way, and then they wanted to speak differently.
You got producers. I was chosen, and then I guess people going, oh, you're sure this is going to go down very well, you know. And of course, you, as you know, you've got to be clear, you've got to enunciate,
yes.
And you know, and there's that big worry, isn't it, that people don't tune into your accent, that they're going to miss things, and I guess they had so many people looking over their shoulders. Now, we had it came from Holland Big Brother,
yeah.
And literally that first Big Brother series, we were doing it from studios in Bow in East London. And we literally had a whole team of Dutch people looking over the British, their British counterparts, telling them what to do. So I imagine that was part and parcel for it. Nasty Nick came out of the Big Brother house, and he was horrible. He said about me, his voice is more suited to a documentary on a sewage farm. So he was pretty nasty. Do you know what? I met him and became friends with him years later.
Yeah.
We lived around the corner from each other in Kent. And he messaged me one day, and then we started hanging out, and then he went and ended up going to Australia, and I haven't seen him since.
Okay.
But yeah, he was a nice fella. He wasn't nasty at all.
Of course, our Anna Nolan was runner-up that first year.
Well, she was lovely. I was thinking the other
still
day
is
that
lovely.
She probably would have won it if Craig Phillips hadn't basically confronted Nasty Nick and sort of saved the day, as it were. But yeah, Anna was an absolute star. I mean, there's a famous British writer called Jonathan. I've gone blank. Sorry, but
no,
his best mates. He's the writer of loads of famous things, but that famous Kathy Burke.
Right.
And they were saying that they were mates with Kathy Burke, and Kathy Burke and him were really good mates with Anna when they first came out of the Big Brother house, and they used to go off drinking and partying together. So, yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Anna is that everybody loved her. She was her background was unique at the time. She was... if I remember rightly, she was gay, and she was an ex-nun.
You're right.
Which and so that was just fascinating. Plus,
yeah. And she's gone on to be, she's presented TV here, and now she works in TV in development.
Well, it couldn't have happened to such
a
lovely person.
She's carved out a nice career for herself. I was just looking there, Marcus, there's been 20 Irish people. I would have...
20, yeah.
20 over the years, yeah. So nearly one a year, really.
Well, that's good. And of course, Brian Dowling,
he
was, I mean, he won it. And then he won the Ultimate Big Brother, which was the sort of the swan song on Channel 4. And so he and of course, he became a presenter for a couple of years.
Yeah,
and he's still doing really well now, presenting various things. And he's such a lovely, charming and interesting person. And
very,
I mean, just think back in the day, again, his sort of thing was he was a gay air steward. Or in fact, I think if I remember rightly, he actually came out on the show, which was also a first. So
yes.
Big Brother always there with the first, and that seems a little bit trite now because of our acceptance of the public's acceptance of gay
people.
It should be.
Marcus,
and it's Common Garden. And
so you were there. You saw them all go through because do you see them or do you do the voiceovers blind?
Well, of course, I do see them, but I sort of do the voiceovers blind, but I'm on site every day and I watch them. I mean, I don't do them to picture because I pretty much know what I do. So
yes,
it would
yes,
be
yeah.
sort of so and so comes to the dining room, so and so is in the bedroom, saying something they wouldn't like their mother to know or something like that,
yeah.
And then. So it's pretty much sort of to formula, but I do get to see it. Yeah. I do get to sort of write my own scripts or at least helping them.
Yeah.
And so I'm sort of that in a minor way, part of the creative process. Well, Big Brother isn't even on at the moment. These are repeats. So,
but it will come back. Will it come back? Do you think?
Well, I haven't got a
crystal ball. Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I mean, it's a pretty unique format. It gets labelled in with other supposedly similar shows, but there's nothing like Big Brother. It's out there and unique, and I think it sort of holds a mirror up to the world and says, "Have a look at yourself." And I think it's a very, very interesting. I mean, it was described by on BBC Radio 4 the other day as the most important TV program in history, bar none.
Right.
And it's because of those things, because of the issues, because of the talking points. And
I suppose it saw the birth of reality TV, which has changed the landscape
absolutely.
Of television.
Absolutely. And lots of different segues. And, I'm very happy to hear that. So
has anybody recognized you from your voice? Have you been asked to do anything odd, strange over the years?
Well, the strangest thing I ever got asked to do, and I had to do it, I got an email about 5 years ago from a lady who, sadly, her mother was dying, and she said, "Hi, Max, I'm really sorry to bother you, but my mother is very ill. She's dying, but she's got a wicked sense of humour, and she's also a massive Big Brother fan, and she has asked, would you record... Alison, you have been evicted from planet Earth. Please leave immediately." And I recorded that, and apparently, you know, I didn't follow it up. But the idea was, at that point, her coffin would roll past the curtain into the fiery furnace. And I thought, oh my goodness, that is a strange thing. But I had to do it, and I thought, good on you, Alison, and your wicked sense of humour.
And good on you for cooperating.
Oh, thank you. Your dying lady's wish, so I'd have to,
So what's going on in your life, Marcus Bentley?
Well, I've just moved to Bristol. I've lived in Kent in the southeast for 30 years, and having spent the previous 20 years up in the northeast, and so I'm just sort of a new chapter in my life, and I'm still doing voiceovers. Before the lockdown, I was thinking of getting back into sort of theatre and things like that, getting my mugshots done and things like that. And during lockdown, I've been surprisingly busy. I've been doing various voiceovers. I did one the other week, for example, for a national health series on mental health, which was very rewarding. It's very nice to sort of help out.
Yeah.
And of course, I've done all my Big Brother stuff, so which has been sort of non-stop for the past sort of 3 weeks, with lots of promos, adverts, little continuity bits for E4 and Channel 4. So I've loved it.
You're almost busy.
Like a real, genuine Big Brother has started. So, you know.
Right. Well, listen, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to talk to us.
Oh, Ray, it's a pleasure, mate. All the best.
Will you sign off there? I'll play your music. Here we go. Go on.
Ray, you have been evicted. Please leave the studios immediately.
Good luck.
Not really.
See you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're still looking for Leitrim Westmeath. 1850 719500. That the number? 1850 715 900 Leitrim and Westmeath. If you were born in or live in one of those counties and you want to step up to the plate and fly the county flag, give us a call now. We'll have two people on after 4 o'clock. Now, How to Fall Apart is the new book by Leah Dawn Hines, and Leah Dawn joins us in studio. Afternoon, Leah Dawn.
Afternoon, Ray. Thank you for
having
me.
Great to have you in studio.
Yes, it's lovely to be here. So nice to be out and about and seeing new people.
Yes, yeah. And I'd say our listeners will appreciate the fact that there's somebody in studio, because it sort of signals a return to some sort of normality.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
because we can all welcome, I think.
Yes, because we would have had somebody in studio every day.
Yeah, I can imagine for you it must have been really weird.
It was strange.
You'd be used to seeing a lot of people.
Yes. Making eye contact. Now, you're still a bit far away from my liking.
I know.
Because we have to talk about something that's very intimate to you.
Yeah.
As in the breakdown of your marriage.
That's right.
So it is difficult. But anyway, we'll see what we can do. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
How to Fall Apart. Because it is a very personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very public thing, isn't it? There's no getting away from the fact that you have to tell everybody. You can't do it secretly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
and then you go one step further. Not only do you have to tell everybody, but you write a book about it.
That's the obvious next move.
Yeah, so go on.
Yeah, I suppose I wrote a column for a few years that the book was inspired by. So I'm probably a little bit inured to, you know, it being out there. I've been a journalist for almost 20 years. So I'm really comfortable with what my boundaries are, I suppose, of what I put out there. And I interview people all the time about really personal stuff. So I'm very cognizant of the burden of care that comes with this kind of thing. And I was able to turn that on myself, you know. And I think it's important when you're doing something like that to have one or two people who you really trust. My mum, my best friend is a writer as well, and my editor. So that really helped. But I also think that what I'm writing about, it's a breakup. A lot of the book is about grief and the things that you go through when you experience a loss. Yes, it's really personal. But it's also stuff that everyone who has been through a breakup, and I know this from the messages I'm getting, they are things they all experience. So in a way, I feel like, you know, it's quite universal. So I have my boundaries of I know exactly what I'm comfortable with.
What were those boundaries?
I didn't really discuss, as you know, it's the aftermath of the breakup. I didn't go into any reasons why the marriage ended.
I noticed that.
There were definitely a few bits as I was going through writing the book, bits around my daughter and I would always know it would niggle at my head and I'd go back and I would maybe say it to my mum and see what she thought, you know.
Being aware that your daughter, although she's six now, will at some stage be old enough to read it, yes.
More of how much I share of her.
Okay.
And some things that, I mean, you know, when you've children, some of the things they say are just so charming, but I would think, no, that's too much. That's private. So I was very conscious of writing when I was writing about her, how much I put in.
Yeah. What you do share with the reader is that, you know, it was a love story, that this was the man you met around 26 and you could picture yourself retiring together, helping each other up the stairs or down the stairs or whatever.
I mean, when it was ending, I got really sad one day that we were never going to garden together when we retired, which is completely ludicrous because neither of us have any experience or knowledge about gardening. So yeah, the kind of loss of the imagined future, some of it completely delusional, is definitely something that you go through when your marriage ends.
Yeah. And you did try your damnedest, both of you, to make it work.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, very often it's a decision that nobody makes lightly, and particularly when there's a child involved. I found it just so strange that it felt like it wasn't, and it was a mutual situation, but it felt like it wasn't our decision in a way, because what you're deciding is affecting the course of another's life so drastically. And I found that really hard. And you can find yourself saying things like, you know, we'll stay until she's 18, that if a friend said to you, you would say, listen to yourself, you know.
Well, people do. I
have to say, I hear people saying, oh, they should have ended it, I really feel like you can't judge people in that situation. Yeah. It's incredibly hard to end a marriage because, you know, in a way, a breakup is quite a kind of workaday loss, in that we'll probably all experience one. But if you're a breakup, more than any other loss, it changes everything about your life. You know, from where you sleep in your bed to what your house sounds like, because there's not another. So facing into that and knowing that that's what you're instigating, that, you know, even if you both know it's the right thing, is quite terrifying.
And then, of course, the life that your daughter's going to have.
That's it. And I think that's the hardest part. And, you know, my mum was really good in that, like, you know, my mum was very kind of reassuring that my daughter would be okay. And my mum's a terrible liar, so I knew she was telling the truth, you know. And that was really reassuring, because I think, as you know, as any parent will know, you can rationalize yourself and you can say, I know I'll be okay, this will be really hard, but we're very vulnerable around our children, and it's much harder to be kind of logical.
But you didn't know you were going to be okay initially, did you?
I knew it was going to be really hard, right? But I'm really well supported, and I think I knew I could cope. I definitely knew I could cope. You know, I knew it was going to be incredibly difficult. But I think, you know, you can get to the point in your life where if you're having to instigate a great change, sometimes that comes because you know that staying would be harder. Yeah. And that can kind of help you, you know?
People who are listening who might think that their relationship, marriage, whatever, is ending.
Yeah.
What were the signs? Or I know every relationship is different, but what were the signs for you?
I think when you...
It wasn't a big thing. It wasn't a big event.
No, but I think when you realise that the person you're married to is usually like, they're like the person you experience life with, you know, and they get the inside joke and they are the person that you want to tell things to when something happens and all of that. And maybe when you realise that, you know, they're no longer that person.
Right.
And you maybe can look back on how your relationship was. And sometimes these things happen very gradually, you know, but you might look back in the past and realise how far you've come from that. But I mean, to anyone who's in that situation, I would say that is the hardest part, when you're just coming to the realisation. And it's terrifying, but it definitely does get easier, you know, because even when you face it, at least then you're kind of taking control of the situation. And I think if you're admitting that it's over, in some way you're saying to yourselves, by admitting that that's the case, you're kind of telling yourself, we can handle this, we can deal with this, because that's a possibility then that this is over, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and you talked about it's a grieving process, and you quote from some movie, is it Alan Alda?
He says divorce is a death without a body.
Yeah.
And absolutely, and that's again, back to your question about it's a very personal book, but you know, I interview people all the time who are grieving, and there are universal things that we will all go through. And that's where I feel like, you know, writing about this kind of thing, I'm not writing anything in a way that people are going to go, what? You know, it's grief, and everyone who grieves experiences.
So it's a memoir, but yet I would imagine if somebody's going through it, it's a self-help book, although it
didn't intend that, but it has been described as that. You're right.
So it doesn't lay out chapters as this is what you do next.
Yeah,
but I suppose knowing, and you say it yourself, that other people have been through this and come out the other side.
Yeah.
You say it constantly that gives you
massive
help.
And I think I was very lucky in that as a journalist. As you know, you meet so many people all the time. So when it ended, I had a lot of people who I knew, you know, not too well, but well enough to say, you know, will you go for a coffee with me? My friend Ruth Griffin, who I just knew through work, met me. And to see someone who has been through it already, but is further down the line, they can reassure you more than anyone else. Like your mum or your best friend can say it'll be okay, but if you see someone who's, you know, a few years into this situation and they're flourishing and their child is okay, that more than anything can say to you, this is going to be okay.
And it sounds, reading between the lines in the book, that time becomes your enemy in a way, because, you know, facing into a weekend where it's just you and your daughter and filling the days.
Yeah. I think at the start, you know, the weeks are fairly full on, and then you get to the weekend and you're just not ready for empty hours. You know, I still remember the first time that we had like a lazy Saturday breakfast ourselves. And before that, I would have felt anxious about, you know, leaving expanses of time that weren't planned, because at the start, it's all about what you're not. You're no longer the family unit. And you're not ready to take on the new stuff. And so anything, any kind of empty time just really brings that back to you.
Right. And you talk about the woo-woo club. So you've encountered all sorts of therapies and yogas and massages, and partly through your work, but partly to write yourself.
That's it. So, yeah, partly, like I say, I mean, I interview amazing women all the time, and a few of them I kind of thought, OK, you're fantastic. I want you to, you know, I'm going to attach myself to you.
Is it fix you? But you're not
help,
broken,
support.
You see.
No, I think support, I would describe it as. But the first thing that I found incredibly helpful was doing a meditation course, which was not related to work. My mum has always meditated and always said to me, you know, oh, you should try this. And you know the way sometimes when your mother says something to you, you out of sheer stubbornness and no logic do the opposite. But after, when you go through a divorce, the stress levels are unreal, and I don't think you're able necessarily to take them down yourself. You need something else to do it for you. So we had a lovely weekend in London. We went over and visited my best friend, and I went and did a meditation course, and it was amazing. Instantly, I felt like they had put a lagging jacket around me. And so there was something between me and the stress. It was incredible, the difference that made.
You're very lucky, and I know not you know,
no, I
you're
am.
Not,
you're absolutely
but
right.
You are lucky in that, that you went to counselling before the marriage broke up, and then you were able to continue that. Have you thought about people in a similar situation who couldn't afford, you know, all of that, what their lives must be like.
Yeah, absolutely, because I found the counselling invaluable. And obviously, you know, the more services that should be made available to people, you know, the better, because I found the counselling was the thing above anything else, that really, just to have a kind of a safe space with someone who is a professional, who is kind of guiding you through it. Was invaluable.
We've all gone through breakups of various levels, and the one thing that I found from my life and talking to other people is that it doesn't matter how amicable the breakup is, that at some point there's a flashpoint, that there's anger. And you mention anger in the book, that it's unavoidable.
Yeah, and I think I thought, well, anger is beside the point. It's not useful here to me. I want to get on with my life. And I think sometimes for women, we're not really taught how to be angry. You know, we don't have a lot of the difficult emotions, people in general are not taught how to express them. And so I spend a lot of time saying, no, I'm not angry. And but of course I was angry. I was angry at the loss of the life that I had wanted and the life I wanted from my daughter. I wasn't angry with, you know, I was angry in general. And I think it took me a while to kind of realize that. But one of the most helpful things anyone has ever said to me was a counselor said, anger can be very scary, but it's like music. It will crescendo and you think, oh God, I can't handle this. And often we'll push it down and avoid it, but it will disappear. But you have to kind of sit with, and that really helped kind of get through it. And I think sometimes at the start, anger can be a bit of a fuel, you know, it can kind of, maybe you need to feel angry at times to kind of keep you going. And then you're not ready to feel some of the sadness that is still there, because later in the book, you know, I kind of, the anger dissipates and all of a sudden I'm just really sad again.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes anger is kind of helpful in that way. It can kind of keep you going.
There's your da and your brother, but all the other characters in the book in your life are women.
That is probably a fair point.
And like you were, you say part in the book that a man isn't going to fix this for me, you know? So you were determined not to go from one relationship into another.
Yeah.
And where are you at now with that?
I mean, of course, I totally understand. For it's different for everyone, and some people are interested in going into another relationship straight away. But for me, it just felt like the opposite of what I wanted to do. And now I feel like, you know, I have a very young daughter. She's nearly six. I have a really fabulous but very intense career. And if I'm going to take time off from those things, I want to be absolutely 100% sure that I'm going to enjoy it. So it's, you know, family or friends or possibly sitting on my own in a quiet room when, you know, 6-year-olds are full on.
Meditating.
Yeah, well, yeah. Staring at the wall, exhausted.
And do you miss that?
Miss a relationship?
Yeah.
No. And I would say that again, like to anyone at the start, you know, it can feel like it can feel so weird. You're living on your own. There's no other adult. Now I go to my parents' house and I can hear myself thinking, God, they're very loud here because it's four adults. And I really love my own space and I love my own company and I love my friends. So no, not for me at all at the moment.
Is that you just rationalizing it, or is that?
No, I mean, maybe when I'm older, but I'm older, like I'm in my 40s. But I think at the moment with a small child, to be honest, it would feel a bit strange to me. And again, everyone to their each their own. But I don't want to take time off from work, daughter or friends for anything else.
To facilitate somebody else. Yeah. And which is lovely in the book, like your daughter saved you. And because when people talk about marriage breakups, when kids are involved, you know, it focuses in on what negative effect will it have on the children. What people don't talk about, which you do talk about in the book, is, you know, your lovely relationship together. And how she got you through and how you got her through.
Yes. I mean, I hasten to add, not in any kind of people think we're best friends, sisters way, where, you know, she got me through just by the sheer fact of, I'm sure everyone says this about their child, but she's a very joyful, fun, you know, just full of beans child. And being around that and living with that is so uplifting. And yeah, I think we were lucky, Ray, like she was young when this happened and we didn't have to watch, you know, with older children. I'm very aware of that's much harder for people to have this, to see a child who's much more cognizant of the disruption.
What's going
on?
So
we were
lucky,
you know, we were really like spared that.
I remember asking somebody, I don't know why I asked this question years ago. It was probably in an interview. Is there a good time for you know, people to break up when it comes to the age of children?
Yeah.
And there's never a good time. But I think what you've said there is that before they become aware of what's going on.
There's a stage in their life where they're still young enough that you could kind of say to them, you know, half the world is covered in blue sea and they'd go, or purple sea, sorry. And they'd go, oh yeah, okay. And if you're, you know, if it happens when they're young enough that their worldview isn't formed, it's much easier to make this, okay.
How to Fall Apart is Leah Dawn's book, L-I-A-D-A-F-O-D-A-N, Hines, H-Y-N-E-S. I'm pretty sure Leah Dawn is a friend I made on holiday when I was in France 33 years ago. We both were around 10. If it's her, it's lovely to hear this interview, especially where I am in my life. Now, there you go.
Wow.
That could be something there. That's all
that
says.
Can you tell me the name afterwards?
Well, there's GDPR issues, but we'll see what we can do.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing.
I remember when my long-term partner and I needed help on breaking up, our counsellor helped us hugely with the concept of letting go of our promise to one another. This was of great help to us both, Philip, in Dublin. And then you say as well, it's renegotiating the relationship with your your ex-husband, because you've had this intimacy and this
it's so hard
all access, if you like, and then you have to shut that off.
Yeah, and I mean, married couples don't have boundaries, you know, so you've got to kind of relearn how to be. And I did, there's a chapter in the book about co-parenting, and it started as an A to Z, and I think I got to like E and thought, what on earth am I doing? Nobody can, as with any kind of parenting, I don't think books and things, you know,
can tell you what to do.
Yeah, you figure it out as you go along. And again, as with any kind of parenting, I think every 6 months or so, it changes. So being open to kind of this isn't set in stone is probably quite helpful.
Well, well done again on the book, How to Fall Apart. Thanks so much for coming into our studio.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Now, get out. We have to sanitise. No.
Charming.
Thanks, Leon. Thank you very much. See you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
5 on 5 at 1. Now, Gerry Daly is joining us after about 4:15, and he's here to offer you advice on any gardening issues you might have. Wasn't it nice for the gardens, if you have one, lucky enough to have one, to get a sup of water? And they're all lush and green. Things are happening that are supposed to happen this time of the year, but probably were put on hold because of the dry spell. Anyway, if you have any questions for Gerry, get them into us. 51551 or rayatrte.ie. I think we might put somebody up on air to talk to Gerry today. He's always asked me when he comes in, is there going to be callers up? I want to talk to people. I want to talk to people. So that's after 4 o'clock. Now, as I was saying, we've sent out our short list of entries for A Page from My Life to our judges, and we thought we'd check in with one of them today. Donal Ryan, how are you doing, Donal?
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Good to talk to you. So you're working away there, working your way through. What's your initial reaction?
Well, I have to say now, genuinely, I'm really, really enjoying it. I've read the 30 entries that I was given, and some of them are just fantastic. I had a feeling to be high standard, but it really is. It's going to be very hard to pick a winner, to be honest.
Oh, right. Because you were one of the first person I talked to about this, and you were so encouraging. So thanks for that. And people may not know this, but you work with sort of budding writers in UL.
Yeah.
And so you sort of do this sort of thing a lot, I would imagine.
We have budding and very accomplished writers in UL and the MA. But yeah, we do. I mean, I'm kind of immersed in other people's stories for a lot of my life. So, I mean, to be honest, like, I wouldn't have relished, like, really relished the idea of judging, you know, but I mean, I'm really enjoying it. And because now and again you come across something that just seems so, you know, so right and so heartfelt and so perfectly formed. It's just great.
And is there something like that in your 30?
To be honest, they're all so good.
Oh, they're all so good, right.
Really, genuinely, the 30 of them are just a really high quality and a pleasure to read. You know, there was no effort involved at all.
Okay, right, okay.
And actually, I was savage about it because normally I ask Emery to be hand when I judge competitions.
I lost you there.
I've been a bit selfish about it. I normally ask Anne-Marie, my wife, to give me a hand.
All right.
When I judge. And I said, look, it's grand. After the first 2 weeks of the final, I'll work with myself.
I do. That's great, isn't it? And the good news is that we're talking to a publisher, so it looks like you know, we're going to get 150 or so published
in a book.
And that'll be huge, won't it, in the lives of these people who've sent in their 500 words?
Absolutely. I mean, you can see it's like there's such intensity in some of these stories. You know, and there are really perfectly formed and resolved stories. Some of them read like really good short stories as well. There's one or two that have twists at the end, and one of them in particular, I had to reread the last paragraph 4 or 5 times to make sure I knew exactly what had happened.
It
was quite clear, but it was such a shocking twist.
And
it really happened as well, so it's even more shocking.
Now, you're involved in Bloomsday. How are you involved in Bloomsday?
I'm only involved because my good friend Anna Taylor asked me to do a reading from The Strigonians, which is a section of Ulysses, as part of a series of readings from the book.
Right.
So people like Colin McCann and Aidan Gillen and Christine Dwyer Hickey, who just won the Walter Scott Prize, congrats Christine, will be reading as well. And to be honest, I'd say mine will be the least inflected and least dramatic reading. by the clip of the
You've read it not once but twice.
I have.
Yeah. Should I feel, you know, I don't know, guilty or
God, no, not
a lesser person, or what? I've missed out on something, or what?
No one should feel guilty for not having read any book, to be honest.
Right. Okay.
And you know what it is? It's nearly 1,000 pages. It's a big ask for anyone. And it is hard to find time to read at the best of times. So to take on a novel that size is a big thing. But I found myself at around 16, desperate to impress my English teacher, who was very fond of Miss Cahill.
So, did you ever crush Donal Ryan?
Yeah, maybe a bit, all right, yeah.
Well, it must have been some crush to impress her with reading 1,000 pages of James Joyce. That's some crush.
I love the time.
Yeah. Right. Miss Cahill, right, there you go. So you read it when you were 16, and when did you return to it then?
About 3 years ago, I read it for the second time. But, you know, in between, I always had a copy of it. It's my dad bought years ago, and I'd read bits of it here and there because of the way language is used in it. You know, there are some lines that just, you could read them 20, 30, 40 times over and over again and never get sick of reading them.
Yeah. They're doing that thing, they're playing it out. 30-hour production of James Joyce's masterpiece, Ulysses. It's a rebroadcast, I think. They originally broadcast back in 1982. To celebrate the centenary of Joyce. Well, it's not exactly 30 hours, it's 29 hours and 45 minutes, and it started at 8 o'clock this morning, and it's going on RT Digital there.
Now, that'll be a bit of a slog, I'd say.
Yeah, but I'd say it'll be something that people will dip into and dip out of, and people will have it there as a reference point for years to come. Well, listen, we'll meet up on Zoom very shortly to discuss the who's going to win A Page from My Life. Thanks so much again for helping us with it and judging it.
My pleasure, Ray.
And good luck tonight with your reading of a bit of Ulysses.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, Donald, talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ray.
Bye. Anish Tosh and Amna Fried Skelton and Oakdale and Marianne Hulawan. Thanks very much, Gurmagud Marianne Hulawan. 51551 ray@rt.ie. We spoke to Marcus, the voice of Big Brother, in the first hour. Bring back Big Brother, says somebody there. And somebody else says, did you know there are three Irish Big Brother fans who are currently doing a podcast on Big Brother? It's called Please Do Not Swear, named after Davina McCall's warning every time they went live to the house. They've just finished season one and finished off the season with an interview with Anna Nolan. Check it out. It's great fun, says Mick in Dublin. So there you go. It's called Please Do Not Swear, wherever you get your podcasts. And Big Brother is like Love Island on steroids, somebody else. And on the chips and the sugar and all that, just a short story, read the chips. I giggled at your story saying what we got, we ate. My mum, bless her, RIP, had a treat for herself now and then, which was a pear, which she always peeled. The same day, Friday, was chip day. She had peeled loads of spuds and mistakenly chipped the pear too without realising. So it was mixed up in the chip pan. I will never forget my brother and I looking at each other when we started eating the chips and the taste of some of them. We were afraid to say anything because, we wouldn't get chips again. Eventually, Mam realised and we did laugh about it. That's Breda in Cork, who had chipped pear, deep fried pear. Was it nice, Breda? Back in 1993, we were on our home from Tunisia. On our way home from Tunisia, we were sitting just in front of Ray when my son, Stephen, noticed Ray and started talking to him. We asked him where Dustin the turkey was, as he had been missing for some time. Ray said he didn't know. That's why he went to Tunisia to try and find him. Did I say that? That was very inventive of me. I remember that a week in Tunisia. The weather was pretty rubbish. Sorry if you've already said this, but will those 150 shortlisted be notified? And please remind us how many prizes there are. Thank you. The people who are being published will obviously be notified, and we're looking at the number there, and still loads of things to be finalised on that, so I hope I'm not hexing it. The other thing is that we have three prizes. Eason.com have given us a cash fund. So €1,000 for the top prize, and then we have two runners up of 500 each. So there you go, all the details you were asking for there. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time for the All-Ireland Quiz. We start with 32 counties and we whittle it down to just one. And that person who represents their county will get a lovely bespoke trophy. And hopefully their picture in the local paper. Today, it's Leitrim versus Westmeath. And representing Leitrim is Fiona Dolan. How are you doing, Fiona?
Hi, Ray.
Good to talk to you.
You too.
So you're in Leitrim Village.
That's correct, yes.
Which is a beautiful place. A lot of people don't know that there is actually a Leitrim Village. It's tiny, isn't it?
It's smallish, yeah.
Right. Sorry, smallish. What's the population of Leitrim Village, would you say?
Oh, maybe 1,000.
Yeah. And it's on it's on the river.
Yeah, it's on the canal that leads into the Shannon Erne.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a nurse.
Oh, frontline. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Whereabouts?
In Sligo University Hospital.
And how have the last 3 months been for you?
They were scary the first couple of weeks, but thankfully we haven't got too many COVID patients, so things are good, really, considering, you know.
Yes, and Sligo Hospital is COVID-free at the moment.
It is, yes. As far as I know.
Which is great news.
It is, thankfully, yes, great.
And do you get a sense, you and your colleagues, that we're out the other side? Is there a sense of that?
Well, we're just all very cautious. We just don't know enough about it, I suppose.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, just to keep practicing safe distancing. And
you and everybody else, there's a lot of mixed messages about it, isn't it? The scientific world won't come out of this very well, I think. You know, even all that mixed messages around masks and all that, one scientist says one thing.
Yeah, even just the basics like hand washing and...
Are important, yes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's at home?
Just my daughter here at the moment.
Right, and what age is she?
She's nearly 4.
Right, so she's unaware of anything, really.
Well, she is aware, really. It's funny, even at that age, she's afraid of the coronavirus.
Is she? Yes. Right, there you go. You have a lot of room up there, though. You have a lot of fresh air and all that.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Absolutely lovely. Beautiful place to live. I love it, yes.
And have you turned your hand to anything new during the lockdown?
Nothing really new from... Because I'm busy working as normal, baking and everything everybody else is doing, I do that anyway, so it's just normal. Yeah. Maybe I'll start a little bit of meditation.
And how's that going for you?
Well, it's not working very well at the moment.
why not?
Oh, I'm just a bit nervous on the radio, but anyway, I shouldn't be.
All right, right, okay. I thought you were meditating now. No,
I only started recently.
Right,
so,
okay. Well, keep it up.
Yes.
And in reading Leah Dawn's book, it really worked well for her in her situation.
Okay.
And when you're in a stressful thing, and, you know, not saying that you are, but. And my wife does a bit of it, and every person who talks about meditation, it's always very, very positive. Change your life stuff. So good luck with that. Okay, have you ever represented Leitrim at anything, Fiona?
Oh, well, at community games a lifetime ago at ART,
At ART, all right, that's great.
Yeah, and under 12.
Nice. Was that in Mosny?
Yeah.
All right, brilliant. They were fun times, weren't they? Up in Mosny. Yeah. Okay, you're up against Kieran Kerrigan, who's representing Westmeath. How are you doing, Kieran?
Everything's great.
Good. Say hello to Fiona there.
How are you, Fiona?
Hi, Kieran.
So you're whereabouts in County Westmeath?
Well, I'm actually just in Mullingar at the moment, but I live in a place called Slaymore. It's just about 5 miles out the road outside of Mullingar.
Which side? The Longford side?
Yeah, the Longford, heading towards Ballycarrig.
Aha. Multi-Farnham and that.
Yeah, multi would be off to one side, yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, I know where you are now. What do you do for a living?
I'm a postman.
Right. I was in our local post office this morning, and I was asking the lady how were things. She said she couldn't believe it. Yesterday they had 10 full bags of post. She said it was unprecedented.
It's as busy as Christmas, or busier.
Every day?
Every day, yeah.
Right.
I think Amazon are going to take over the world, I think.
Oh, yeah, well... he's strapped for cash, that poor man, Bezos. He's only worth $135 billion, or something like that.
Yeah, he had a big alimony bill or something.
He did, yeah. And what she was saying was, of all the bags of post, that a lot of them were returns of clothes.
Yes, I suppose people, you can't get to try on stuff now.
Yeah. So you're delivering them, and then they're bringing them back to the post office, and they're going back, and then they're coming back again. So it's a vicious circle, yeah.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it, like, they have free returns or something. I don't know what way.
Yeah.
There would be a lot of stuff going back. But there was a lot of, like, say, grandparents of that sending stuff to their grandchildren.
And there's a lot of letter writing going on,
which
is great.
A lot of letter writing going on. But we had the postcards and that, like.
And can you sense the excitement, you know, when people order stuff on Amazon and then they're looking out for you, like in the old days when there was a package coming from America, and they're looking out for you, and then they see you coming up the drive, and can you sense the excitement?
Well, especially the kids, anyway.
Yeah.
I get excited myself. I've ordered a few bits of pizza. I had to be excited.
What have you ordered?
Oh, I ordered basketballs and tennis rackets and stuff like that for the kids.
Yeah. What age are the children?
12. Thomas is 12 and Laura's 10.
Right. And how's the homeschooling? Is it over?
They're doing a bit. It's over now. Right. Although they said that they're going to still do a bit over the summer, but I don't think that will happen.
Sure, what harm if they don't?
You know, if they read a book or
Be fine, yeah, yeah. Have you ever represented Westmeath in anything?
No, my dad and his sister have, but I haven't.
Right, they don't count. But anyway,
they don't count.
What did they do?
Well, Alice, my sister, played football for Westmeath Ladies and was in Mosney as well. And part of my father, he played in goals for Westmeath in the 60s.
Oh, did he? Right. What was his name?
Johnny Kerrigan.
Johnny Kerrigan. There you go. People know him. Okay, county songs for you, Fiona Dolan, representing Leitrim.
Yes.
Isn't that beautiful? And for you, Kieran Kerrigan.
Last Thursday after market in the town of Mullingar, Joe Dolan introduced me to a famous movie star. She'd been married several times before to men of different creeds, and she thought she had a sucker in The Bachelor from Westmead.
There you go, The Bachelor from Westmead. That's great. Okay, good luck to you both. No referring to Google. Yeah, good luck.
Oh, thank you.
And a bit of tension then. Okay, Fiona, first question for you is on Westmeath. Can you name the colourful CEO of Ryanair who was born in County Westmeath in 1961? It's there.
O'Leary.
Take your time. Yes.
O'Leary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll take that. Mr. O'Leary will do me, but it's Michael O'Leary. Right, okay.
Yes.
And for you, Kieran, a question on Leitrim. The county town of Leitrim is Carrigan-Shannon. True or false?
True.
It is. It's not Leitrim Village. It's Carrigan-Shannon. Fiona, your second question is an audio question. Can you name this group? Well, who's that?
The Eurythmics.
It is. There must be an angel.
Thank you.
Well done. And for you, Kieran, can you name this band?
Oh, I know that one.
Yeah, but it's not your question.
It's
Aha. Aha, that's right. Yes, it is. And Take On Me. That's it. You know this works, Fiona. You can only answer your own questions. Okay. This one is yours. Question number three. Which one of these is not, that's important, not a layer of the earth? Meridian, crust or mantle? Which is not a layer of the earth? Mantle. I need an answer from you.
Meridian, maybe?
Meridian. Is the correct answer? Yes. Crust, mantle, are. Well done. 3 out of 3. And for you, Kieran, similar question. Which one of these is not a layer of the Earth's atmosphere? Stratosphere, troposphere, astrosphere.
Troposphere, the middle one.
No, it's astrosphere. The last one there. Okay. So, don't worry. Still, you're on
no
two.
Problem,
Fiona's on three. Question number four for you, Fiona, is an audio one. Can you name this movie, please?
I mean, Mexico is way the hell down there, and you're in here, and that's the way it is.
Yeah, right. That's the way it is. It's down there, and I'm in here. I guess it comes down to a simple choice, really. Get busy living, or get busy dying.
Well.
Ooh. Is it... Shawshank Redemption.
It is Shawshank Redemption, yes.
Okay.
And for you, Kieran, can you name this movie?
The ability to destroy a planet is insignificant next to the power of the Force.
Don't try to frighten us with your sorcerer's ways, Lord Vader. Your sad devotion to that ancient religion has not helped you conjure up the stolen data tapes or given you clairvoyance enough to find the Rebel's hidden fort.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Well...
Hello?
Yeah, Kieran.
Oh, it's Star Wars.
It is Star Wars. It is Star Wars, yes. Okay. Now, Kieran, you're on three. Fiona, you're on four. So, I know you're not too familiar with the quiz. So, for this question, you can go for a one-pointer, right? Or you can go for a three-pointer. The three-pointer is obviously more difficult. Now, if you go for a one-pointer, you'll be on five. Kieran can then go for a three-pointer. If he gets it right, he beats you. If you go for the three-pointer, he can't catch you. Whatever he does. So the choice is yours. It's a strategic choice, Fiona, representing Leitrim. A 1 point or a 3 point? What's it going to be?
I think I'll just go with the 1 point.
Okay. Radio. Good luck with this. For 1 point, the official currency of China is the renminbi. True or false? R-E-N-M-I-N-B-I. Renminbi.
False.
No, it's actually true. It's true.
No.
It is. Yeah, it's true.
It is.
Yeah, it's true. So you're
at
on four.
End, isn't it?
You're four, right? So Kieran now, if he goes for 1 point, we're into a tiebreak situation. Or if he goes for a three-pointer and gets it right, Kieran, you win. So what's it going to be, do you think?
I'll try the 3 points.
Oh, you're going to go for it. Go for goal. Go for goal. Okay, for 3 points to get you and Westmead into the second round of the All-Ireland Quiz. Here it is. Good luck. Which of these Irish counties is the largest by total area? Longford, Armagh, Fermanagh or Monaghan? So which of those counties largest by total area? Longford, Armagh, Fermanagh or Monaghan? I need an answer from you.
Armagh.
Armagh, you say?
Yeah.
Okay, so this to bring you up to 6 points. Longford is just over 1,000 square kilometres. Monaghan, just under 1,300 square kilometres. Armagh, just over 1,300 square kilometres. And the biggest one is Fermanagh.
Be God.
Just short of 1,700 square kilometres. You wouldn't have think it, but there you go.
No.
Kieran.
Well done,
lovely.
Fiona.
Yeah, there you go, Fiona. Well done. Kieran, well done to you as well. We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show mug.
Not a bother. Thanks a million, Ray.
And keep delivering. Keep delivering.
I'll do me best.
You're doing a great job. Thanks, Kieran. See
you. Thanks a million, Ray. Bye, 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 bye.
Fiona, well done. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're true. And so too is Leitrim to the second round of the All-Ireland Quiz. And we'll talk in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay, Ray, thank you very much.
Yeah, see you now. Mind yourself. Okay. Bye,
lovely, bye,
bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Gerry Daly joins us in studio, as he will do for the next few Tuesdays. He's across a competition because we're teaming up with Bord Bia and Growmore. We have €5,000 worth of prizes to give away on the 25th of August, and all we're asking you to do is send in pictures or a video of how your outdoor space or garden has flourished and flowered during the lockdown. We have five different categories, €5,000 to give away. You can find out more and get advice, growmore.ie, and you can send in your pictures and your descriptions and your videos to garden@rte.ie. A lot of information there, but it's all on our page if you go to rte.ie. So we're looking for best use of space, most colourful, something that you've done to your garden that has helped you live through the lockdown, veggie patch, and then a garden portrait. It could be you, the dog, the gnome or whatever, and send them in to us. And thanks to everybody who sent them in so far. Katrina Sheeran sent us in a great picture. It's a portrait one of two children enjoying the paddling pool. You can't do that anymore because of the hosepipe ban. And there's Elaine Cowley up a tree. Thanks for that, Elaine. And there's loads more as well. So keep them coming in. And 25th of August is the closing date. Gerry, how are you?
Very good.
Yeah, that bit of rain, welcomed.
Yeah, widely welcomed. Yeah, it was a bit patchy though. In places it's very heavy, and other places then it got none at all.
Mm.
So it's quite variable, but overall it's been a good drop.
But it's an nearly overnight you can see the change in the colour. It becomes this lush sort of green.
Ah, yeah. Well, I mean, it had approached drought conditions. I don't know if it actually had reached officially a drought, but it was very, very close to it. So plants were beginning to suffer. Once you see a few leaves dropping off, a few lawns getting a bit brown. And it's amazing how fast it turns around. But one of the reasons it turns around fast with thunder and lightning knocks nitrogen out of the air. And nitrogen is a fertiliser for plants.
Ah.
And it greens up after a heavy thunderstorm.
So it's not just the water, it's the nitrogen as well.
Not just the water, it's the nitrogen nutrient as well, yeah.
I never knew that. Thank you for that. That's what we have you in.
There we are.
Now, you've been asking us to have callers on. So, say, Mary Kyo's on the line. How are you doing, Mary? You'll have to put headphones on there, Gerry. Should have mentioned that to you. How are things?
Not too bad at all, thanks.
Are you seeing the benefit of the drop of rain in the garden?
Oh, we are, yes. Everything bounces up very, very quickly.
Yeah. I believe you're lucky enough to have a large back garden.
We have. We're very, very fortunate, especially in this time. I know not everybody is as lucky as we are, and we're thankful every day for what we have. And we're out in it every day,
yes,
enjoying
it.
Yeah.
What's your question for Gerry?
I have a peony, which is in its second year now, and I have done everything that I can lay hands on information-wise to get it to flower, and it's not cooperating. I got one bloom on it this year and nothing else. Lush foliage, and nothing else happening. And I'm afraid that the season is going to end and I won't have had the chance to remedy whatever the problem is, and I don't know what to do.
Well, basically, peonies take a while to settle in when they've been planted out. They don't like to be moved very much, and they take a while to settle into a new home. And they very often can last for decades after that, then 80, 100 years even.
Wow.
Now, the thing about them is, if you have them close to shrubs or other plants that might be creating a bit of competition, that's not great.
Well, I had them in the ground last year, Jerry, and I thought they might have been interfered with by, you know, light and whatever with shrubs around us. So I've raised them up and now they're in pots this year and not planted as deeply, because I know that can be a problem. I'm feeding them. They're on, they get the sun from maybe 12 o'clock in the afternoon up until late evening, and nothing.
Yeah, well, what I would be concerned about with peonies is roots underneath, from a hedge, from a shrub nearby, from a very vigorous perennial flower.
But they're in pots now, so that...
Yeah, they're in pots
now.
Yeah,
I've eliminated that problem.
Yeah, but in pots, they're stymied by the pot.
Aha.
Whereas when you had them in the open ground, they were stymied possibly by roots of other plants.
You can't win, Mary.
I can't win. I think they just don't like me. Maybe I'll try a different plant.
The rest of two, Mary, put them in a place where there's no roots underneath from a hedge, where there's good sunshine, where they'll get natural soil, and dig in a little bit of good garden compost before you plant. And then patience from there.
Are they worth the effort, Jerry?
Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go.
Might I see something this year, Jerry?
No, not this year.
Not this year. Okay.
But they won't do anything in the pots. The pots will stymie them completely.
Okay.
Okay.
Aren't you delighted now you made the call, Mary?
I absolutely am. Terrified and all as I was coming on the radio. But thank you very much.
Thanks, Mary. Good luck with those.
Take care.
Bye. Anna Mary Foley. How are you doing, Anna Mary?
I'm fine, thanks, Ray. How are you?
Good. Where are you?
I'm in Navan, so I am.
Right.
Yeah.
And what's your problem?
My problem is, hi, Jerry. My problem is red lily beetles. I bought a lily last autumn and I planted it. And over the winter, everything was fine. But when they started to flower then, I noticed a couple of weeks ago, there were these red insects coming out on the plant.
Yes.
And I discovered when I did a little more research about it, I discovered they're called red lily beetles.
Yes.
And since that, they have spread, really, you know, and there are other lilies in the garden, they have spread to them as well, and they have eaten some of the lilies away. Now, I did try, I picked some of them off, because there was advice that you could pick them off, and I did that. And last week, I actually put a cup of Jace fluid into water, and I watered the lilies with the Jace fluid mixture, and the following day when I looked at them, there was an awful lot of larvae and everything on the leaves, so I picked all those off as well. And I'm just wondering, what do I do next, because I really want to get rid of them out of the garden.
The only way you can control them is to keep picking off the larvae. Now, they're very disgusting larvae, because they pile their own poos on their back.
That's right, I discovered that when I was reading about them.
They pile each larva, which is a grub, growing along a leaf. They pile up their own poo
on
their back to disguise, as a disguise, and so they look like a bird dropping.
Ah, poo, I see. Yeah. Very, very clever.
So if you don't take them all off, they will get adulthood, and the red lily beetle is red when they're adult, and they lay eggs and they hatch out. So the only thing you can do is keep... Now, it isn't easily done, to be honest, and most people give up after a while picking off these larvae.
Okay.
But that's all you can do.
Right. I was wondering if I dug up the bulbs all together and washed them off. No. Because I'm afraid that they're actually in the soil.
Oh, they are in the soil, but the only way they come out to breed.
Okay.
And to feed. And that's where you get them and get rid of them.
Right. Yes.
So you have to keep picking.
Just keep picking them. Yes.
And try not think about the fact that they have their poo on their back.
No, I try not to think about that.
Right, okay.
All right,
Anna Mary.
Okay,
bye now. Mind yourself.
Bye.
Bye. I really enjoyed that, Jerry. I think we have something here. Would you do a show on RT? Have you ever thought of doing a show on RT? I'm joking. So is it irishgarden.ie? Is that where it'll get you?
The Irish Garden. The Irish Garden magazine.
Yes.
Which will be out, new one out later this week.
Okay.
and garden.ie.
Garden.ie, okay. Jerry, we'll talk to you next Tuesday. Thanks so much. That's it from us. Katie Hannon is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.